long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
The government, hug the government, love. The government, hug the government, love. The government.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Trey Orndorff, a political scientist at Oklahoma Christian University. And I am joined for this midweek supporters exclusive show with our professor of law at Chase Law School, Ken Katkin. Ken, welcome to our ongoing constitutional, well, not quite law, but the Constitution show.
Hey, it is great to be back.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. We have long now since put the original text of the Constitution behind us, and we have been marching our way through the amendments, and we're not even yet the Bill of Rights, and we have now come maybe to the most exciting, maybe not the most exciting, but one of those amendments that just doesn't come up often, and so this week we're really going to be taking on the Third and the Fourth Amendments. And as we always do, we're going to start by just reading that amendment and then getting into them, because I know there's a lot. I'm teasing. The Third Amendment is all about quartering of soldiers. And what the Third Amendment says is this, again, it says, quote, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. But of course, this is not something that has come up on the regular. As a matter of fact, until you sent me the case dealing with it, I didn't even know there was a case dealing with the Third Amendment. I'm going to be honest here. This is not something I teach as an undergraduate faculty member.
Yeah, there's no Supreme Court case dealing with it, but there is one case that came up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit around 1980, the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to take it up. So that's as far as it got.
And what's the outcome of that case? You know, this is kind of cool to me since we only have one.
Yeah, so we can talk about the should we talk for a minute about why we have the Third Amendment and then talk about the case?
That's actually a good point, right? And I think one of the things that kind of forget is this is a post-Revolutionary War phenomenon, because this is something that happened with the British.
Yes, it is literally one of the intolerable acts that are listed in our Declaration of Independence that the British had enacted the Quartering Acts in 1765, which required American colonies to pay all the costs of British soldiers that were serving here, and also requiring that if the local barracks provided insufficient space, colonists would have to lodge the British troops in the alehouses and inns and livery stables that already existed. So this was really, to the framers, a very big deal. They thought the Quartering Acts were one of the reasons, one of the great injustices that were so intolerable that they justified seceding from England. And they put that right in our Constitution in the Third Amendment. But because
worth saying, I think, Ken, that I think as contemporary citizens, it's hard for us to understand how leery of the of military our framers really were.
Absolutely. But also, and particularly of this idea that, you know, if you've got the military hanging around, you know, they're going to show up at your house, they're going to demand to be quartered, they're going to want to eat your food, that's basically how the military subsists. This was kind of a big part of the resentment of the British military. And so it was important enough to our framers that they put it in our Constitution. But of course, we already had a stronger safeguard against this than the Third Amendment, which is the fact that we are a representative democracy.
Exactly. You don't have the king controlling the forces, and I think this is something that you've brought up a couple of times, and it's worth repeating again that the voting process itself ended up being a check in a way that not all of our framers recognized to the extent it would be a check.
Yeah, because they didn't, you know, the system they set up wasn't as democratic as what we have now. I mean, they already had the House of Representatives being the one part of the government that was highly accountable to the people, because the House members had to be elected by the public directly, and had to be reelected every 2 years.
And although we see it as being kind of an indirect election, and it is, it having an upper chamber that was even one step elected removed, that's a democratic revolution in some ways, because you didn't have an aristocratic body
Right. In the House of Lords in England, they would just inherit their lordships, but mm-hmm. or sometimes be given them by the Queen, but never elected. But yeah, here, I mean, I think our Senate was not it was intended not to be as accountable to the people, but our House was definitely intended to be accountable to the people. And so since you couldn't have really had a law, even in wartime, that prescribed the quartering of soldiers unless the House of Representatives actually passed it, and it would never be popular to pass it, there was already a lot of safeguard there. That's why it really hasn't come up very much. So unlike a lot of other provisions in the Constitution, it's the concept that people should have to quarter soldiers in their house has never been one that elected officials have wanted to stand up for and bring a bill to the floor. So this is just not an issue that's come up. But I will now talk about the case of Eng Bong.
You might say to yourself, well, we've never fought a war where this could even come up, right? Like you know, Japan never ends up invading Alaska. So it's not like right. We have troops hanging around. So what happens in the 1980s?
It comes up in peacetime, of course, not in wartime. And it actually, the unit of the armed forces at issue was the National Guard, the New York National Guard, not any of the not any of the armed forces controlled by the Defense Department. But what happened was in New York State, there was a prison in Mid Orange County that's near. They keep changing the name of this bridge. I know it is the Tappan Zee Bridge, but I think now it's called the Mario Cuomo Bridge. But up in that part of New York State, and the prison guards were unionized, and under their union contract, among other provisions that they had, they had a right to have some housing. Essentially in a dormitory, because some parts of New York are expensive to get housing in. And so you had prison guards. They're all civilians. They're working for New York State and guarding the prison. But they went on strike. And so when the prison guards went on strike and wouldn't go to work guarding the prison, the governor called in the National Guard to guard the prison. And when the National Guard gets called in, the guardsmen are being called in from all over, and they need housing. And so the governor says, okay, well, we've got these deadbeat civilian employees who are on strike who won't work, but they're living in the housing. And he ordered them evicted until they went back to work so that the National Guardsmen who came there to guard the prison could actually stay in those dorms and guard the prison. And so that became our first ever Third Amendment case that gets litigated in the federal court in New York and then in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, which has jurisdiction over New York. And the prison guards, the civilian prison guards, said, well, if we've been told to leave our house in peacetime so that the National Guard can come in and sleep in our beds.
You violated the Third Amendment.
And although the federal district court thought that was a little far-fetched and just dismissed it, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit actually did rule in favor of that claim. And so there's actually several aspects of that holding that broke ground. It's actually the very first case that clarifies that National Guardsmen are considered soldiers for purposes of a Third Amendment claim. That itself was up for grabs at that point in time. It also is the first case to hold that the Third Amendment not only applies against the federal government, as it always did, but also is incorporated through the 14th Amendment. We'll talk about that more when we get to the 14th Amendment.
But we brought that up a little bit when we dealt with, you know, the First Amendment, for example. But yeah, that's a big deal coming up.
And the Second Amendment, too. And so the Engblom case holds that the Third Amendment is incorporated and so does apply against the New York State government. And finally, it holds that the protections apply to tenants with leasehold interests, not only to homeowners. Right. So there was a possible argument in this case that these prison guards who lived in the state dormitory weren't even the owners of the property.
You know, when I read the case, I didn't even think about that, but that's an excellent point.
Yeah, but the court found that also. So it had to actually resolve three different contested questions, you know, whether the National Guard counts as soldiers, whether the Third Amendment applies against state governments, and whether Third Amendment rights can be claimed by tenants or whether they can only be claimed by property owners. And it did rule in favor of the guards in all three. It was a 2-1 decision, divided panel, and so it possibly could have gone up to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court just decided to let it stand, and that's still where we are. That's the only Third Amendment case.
I can't imagine that that kind of circumstance is going to happen often. But that, you know, I think it is one of those things. As a social scientist, you always think, well, what? How likely is A? And even if something's really unlikely, that doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Right. Well, what would be really interesting is if this comes up again eventually in one of the other circuits other than the Second Circuit, and they don't agree with the Second Circuit's analysis.
And then
the Supreme Court's going to have to take the case then. But
you almost want it to happen then. Just so you can get one more.
one more Supreme Court decision on a Bill of Rights provision.
Although my guess is that your students would not want that. There's nothing else. I don't need Dr. Katkin asking me any additional.
Yeah, I don't test them on this. I do tell them about it, but I don't test them on the Third Amendment.
You know, I think 1 year you should do that just to throw them for, I mean, they're law students. They should be ready for that curveball, Ken.
I know. Well, the only reason I don't is because I don't actually make them read the Engelbaum versus Carey case. I just tell them about it the same way I just told you about it. And I feel like I shouldn't test them on anything unless them read it.
That's fair. I hear you.
But if I made them read it, it would be to the exclusion of something else I'm already making them read. So I'd have to think about that.
I hear that. Well, I mean, as much fun as the Third Amendment is, I think we have time to do a little bit more show. And that means we're going to move over to the Fourth Amendment. And there is a lot of bits to this. But before we get Fourth Amendment, I just want to say that this is where we're going to have to end our ad-supported preview. I'm really sorry about that. But if you want to continue with us, it is not hard at all. All you got to do is head to patreon.com/politicsguys and select your basic level of support. And then you will have access to the rest of this show, the rest of talking about the Fourth Amendment, and of course, all of the constitutional amendment shows that Ken and I have done. One of the great things about these supporter exclusive shows is that you have the ability to kind of step away from that news cycle and talk about things. You know, the Third Amendment is not likely to change anytime soon, and neither is the Fourth. And so we'd love for you to be able to come in, learn about that, and join Ken and myself for a longer go. But again, if you want to do that, you need to head to patreon.com/politicsguys. Again, that's patreon.com/politicsguys. Now, there are other ways to support the show as well so that you can get the midweek supporters exclusive show. The first of those is Venmo, where we're at Politics Guys. You can also support the show through PayPal. All of those are in the support links as you scroll down on your device of choice. Or if you like doing it the old way, head to politicsguys.com/support. Now, if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to financially do that right now, not a problem at all. Just shoot out to mail@politicsguys.com and we will get you set up. Now, whether you're a supporter or not, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review us on the podcast app of your choice. If you've got any questions about the Constitution or anything else, you can reach us at mail@politicsguys.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Find all of that in the show notes. The executive producers of the Politics Guys are Bruce Johnson, Wilma Marino, Daniel Toe, Ryan Beasley, and Don Oglesby. We'll be back with a new episode this weekend, and I hope you'll join us